Hi, I'm Amanda Pacheco.
This is Sheila.
Hello, it's Davida.
I'm Gina Lovato.
Hey, it's Alana Dunn.
I'm Caitlin Bailey.
This is Melissa Novak.
It's Sean Jacobson.
Hey, it's Bethany Nicole. And welcome to Sex Party.
And welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Sex Party with your host, Dustin Rybka.
And welcome to Sex Party. I'm your host, Dustin Rybka. And take a look around if you're watching on YouTube, because this is the brand new set for Sex Party. It's not done completely. We'll be adding things here and there, but we're all clear in the new studio. So let's fucking party, right? My guest this week, Heather Shannon, certified sex therapist. She's also a podcast host. We get into it. We talk about what got her into being a sex therapist. We talk about sex work, OnlyFans. We talk about sexual communication. I know, right? It's important, but we really, really nail the sexual communication component, how it can make your life a lot easier, right? When people open their relationships, do they do it for the right reasons? Do they come to an end? Do they continue on successfully? We get into all of that and more. So from the new studio, let's get you over to the interview. Please enjoy my conversation with Heather Shannon.
This week's conversation.
Heather Shannon, welcome to Sex Party. How are you doing?
Thank you, Dustin. I'm pretty excited to be here. You're rocking the neon sign. I'm matching your purple colors. It's a good day.
Yeah, we're definitely in sync. Not the band in sync, although they just got back together, which is everyone's, you know, celebrating in the streets. But you are the first guest with this new set or setup. I like to call it a set. You can call it a setup, whatever, mm-hmm. for the show. So you do match the neon sign for those of you that are watching on YouTube.
Pretty exciting.
I'm excited. This is the first time I've recorded in this room, minus a couple small little teasery thing. So welcome. Super happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
It's a happy day. It's a happy day.
We love podcasting, you know?
Yeah, podcasting is great. Minus yeah. the fucking lighting that we just wasted yeah. 20
you
minutes
guys missed
on.
That.
Yeah. We didn't record it, so you'll never see it. But maybe one day we'll have I do actually have a blooper reel coming for Sex Party.
Oh, that's fun.
But it's mainly me like fucking up my intros and outros where I'm like, fuck ass, like whatever. So that'll be coming.
Okay,
but for the people who don't know who you are, they've never seen your face, they've never heard your name. Can you talk a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
For sure. Yeah. So I'm Heather Shannon. I'm a certified sex therapist and host of the Ask a Sex Therapist podcast. I help people with their sex life. You know, that's the really, really short version. But it could be, you know, anything from erectile dysfunction to low libido to lack of sex to healing from sexual trauma. Basically, some people don't know what a sex therapist is. So basically what that is, I'm a licensed mental health clinician. And then I went on and got a sexual health certificate and I got certified through ASEX. It's a whole process. But that allows me to specialize in the area of sexuality, but I'm still kind of really working with, let's get to like the root issues. Like what's at the root of whatever's not working for you sexually. So whether it's, you know, attachment problems or, you know, feeling a sense of pressure, you know, that's where I like to help people. It's like, let's kind of be little sex detectives and figure out what's going on. How do we fix it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of detective work, I think, just being a mm-hmm. human who's a sexual being, I think. So I can only imagine for you, the master detective, having to try to assist people in that journey or in that sort of discovery, because, you know, there is no, and we talk about this on the show all the time, there's no fucking rule book, there's no guide. It's kind of like, hey, you have a brain and genitals and sometimes they get along and sometimes they don't. Good luck. By the way, French fries are 2-for-1 on Wednesday. Like, what? You know? Yes, I just feel like, you know, with your work, are there certain things that you're drawn to personally more? Like, are there certain things that you're like, man, I really need to solve that mystery? Is it?
It changes.
Yeah.
You know, so like recently I'm kind of on this thing where how can we help women especially to feel safe to be in their sexual energy? You know, I think so many women kind of shut it down as a way to protect themselves, and myself included still, even being a sex therapist and kind of doing my own healing work, there's still moments where it's like, you know, I don't really want to get a comment from some asshole. I don't really want to get someone who thinks that I fuck all my clients. Although I think there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not what I do. And I would lose my license. And, you know, and so I'm kind of in a place where I'm like, I'm over it. Why can't women just kind of be in their sexuality, and how can we create a safer space from that? So that's what I'm kind of exploring both personally and professionally. But there's lots of things. Like for me, it's like when I start to see patterns where I'm like, oh, this is not the first client who has come to me with a very similar pattern. So sometimes sexuality gets shut down because an argument happened and someone felt unsafe because of that. It wasn't even a directly sexual thing necessarily, but it could be someone got really, really angry. And now their partner is like, ooh, is that going to happen again? I don't know if I feel super safe with this person. I'm going to shut it down. This is one way for me to kind of detach. It's like, maybe I'm not going to break up and leave the relationship, but I'm going to be like, halfway shut down. So things like that are interesting to me when I start to hear them from more than one person. I also really like working with erectile dysfunction. I don't know why, but I do. And I guess part of it is because I think often the penis is like telling the man something and the man is not wanting to listen. And I'm like, no, your penis is really smart. When it doesn't want to perform, it's kind of trying to tell you, maybe you don't really feel that into this person. Maybe you want to have more of an emotional connection. Maybe, you know, you don't feel like you can say no, but you actually can, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we've had a lot of people on the show that, you know, and we come up against this sort of topic where it's like, the thing that they can't stand is that people think that like, penises or dicks or cocks or whatever we're calling them have to be hard all the time. Like,
right. That's insane. That's insane.
Yeah. And if they're not hard, there's something wrong.
Right.
And I think that is something that is insane to me. Mm-hmm. And I would totally, I mean, men feel that way. Women feel that way. I just saw like, I don't know, some reel or something where it was like a famous porn star and they're, you know, they're asking her like, you know, during your orgy scenes, like what's the biggest turnoff? And she's like, oh, like if a guy's not hard, like you have one job and it's to be hard. And like, I get it. But even as a man, if I am not like massively hard all the time, I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Oh my God. And it wasn't until like starting the show and like learning more that, and I think that's a really huge problem, not just for men, but for relationships.
Absolutely. And you're right. Like, it doesn't matter the gender. It's like, we're somehow all socialized to think that like men should always want sex. They should never say no. Their penis should always be hard. It's like the lightest touch should like turn them on and give them an erection. It's just like men are humans too. And men have emotions too. And men maybe aren't feeling 100% one day or are a little emotionally off. You know, it's like, we have to just allow room for being human and let go of these assumptions, because it just backfires.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot to when you're hooking up with a partner that maybe it's like the first time or the first couple times and you aren't like incredibly hard and they're like, well, what's wrong? Is it something wrong? Is it me? Is it whatever? Because that leads to this like line of questioning, you know?
And that's the thing too. Women think it's about them. And I'm like, it's 90% of the time, it's not about the woman. You know, it's like, okay, maybe the guy's not ready. Like, I had a guy friend years ago who was exploring non-monogamy, and it was his idea, and his wife wanted getting more into it than he did. And he was noticing he really loved meeting new people, like making out. But then when it came to sex, he was having a hard time performing. And that was kind of when we discovered talking that like, he wasn't fully in it. That's why, you know? So then he was able to set different boundaries for himself and kind of adjust his expectations. But sometimes we have to accept that.
Yeah. And there's always nerves that are unexpected, I think, when someone is really attracted to another person.
Totally. Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, like why is my dick not hard? And that can just happen because you're nervous, because you want to do such a good job.
100%. Yes, and I want women to hear that. I'm so glad you said that as a man, because I want women to hear that. Sometimes it's because he's extra attracted to you. Sometimes it's because he's nervous because he's so into you. So it's like, not only is he not into you, he's extra into you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, as a man, I would say, and I'm in my early 40s, so I don't know.
Excellent
age
range.
For sure. I don't know what's ahead of me, but I can say any sort of like erectile dysfunction that I've experienced has always been from someone like that. Well, where it's, I'm worried that I'm not going to give my best performance because I'm so into this person. Mm-hmm. And I want them like limping out of the room, like, what happened? Oh my God, you know? Because I have had those moments where I'm getting like texts from someone the next day and they're like, you know, I think my vagina's bruised, but I like it. I'm having trouble functioning at work. Like, when can we do that again? So when you have that, right, and you're capable.
Those are
of
fun
that,
times. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you meet someone that you're like, oh my God, I really like this person. I want to like blow her back out and make her fall in love with me and make her come a million times. Mm-hmm. And then you just, because you want that so bad, it's like, okay, buddy. Oh shit. Like that's rough, you know?
Yeah. But I think what you're saying also, like, it's something I've learned more about men through being a therapist and through being a sex therapist as well, is like men care and men try and men want to please us, you know? And so I think working together to figure out how to make that happen and communicating is important.
Well, and I think, I think obviously like the communication piece is probably the most important thing that I've learned, like doing this show for as long as I've done it. I mean, what the fuck's the problem there? Why can't people, you know, why can't two people communicate? And I'm not even like a sex therapist or anything like that. But I would say, from just the limited knowledge that I have, that it's more of a male-female problem than it is. That's what I would think. So
there was some research that was showing that, I'm trying to remember if it was, I think it was lesbian women maybe have like the highest relationship satisfaction. And then there's also the orgasm gap. So yeah, lesbian women are having more orgasms than straight women.
Maybe it's because they're communicating more.
I know. I kind of wonder. I think it's like it de-emphasizes penetration probably and more focus on the clitoris. So that's probably part of it. But yeah, it could also be the communication. You're right. That's interesting. I haven't really thought about that piece as much, actually, that the communication might be more challenging between a man and a woman than two people of the same gender.
To me, it's like a man and a woman is like this gender norm sort of like societal thing that we're all like
100%
accustomed to. So it's like, if it's a man and a man, and again, like, I'm just some heterosexual, like, white podcast dude, so nobody take what I say. So like, if it's a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or a man, woman, man, like, you're already in this zone that's like not culturally normal. So you're like probably more willing to like say like, hey, when you go down on me, I really would like it if you use your tongue on the balls, on the clit. Don't my clit's up here, honey, not in my asshole, or like whatever, right? So like, I just feel like you're already sort of doing your own thing. You're already being a rock star and like breaking all the norms, right? And I'm doing air quotes for everybody who's listening when I say norms. So I think maybe it is easier to communicate in those kind of dynamics.
It's interesting because I think it's easier and more challenging. Like, it's easier in the sense that, you know, because there's not like a social script of how things should go, you kind of have to. So on one hand, like, there's no avoidance of the communication. Like, you can't just go on autopilot because kind of there is no autopilot. But forces you to wind up having good communication skills and talking about some things. Whereas I think a male-female pairing, you can get away with avoiding it and just go with sort of the default script of like, well, I don't know, here's kind of what I think is expected. And, you know, here's what seems socially acceptable. So I guess we'll just do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's like setting aside time to like, not just have sex, but like talk about it is really something that nobody wants to do because they're,
I think it's great.
Me too. me too. And a large part of my relationship is talking about sex, but to be honest, awesome. Like we could talk about it more and I would be okay with it. I love sex. I think it's its own language, especially when it's sort of done the right way, or when it feels really good, is when you're like really rolling on something with somebody. And I just feel like most people, you know, and we all have that check the box for the day sex, you know, it's like masturbating, like, I gotta rub one out before I go to sleep or whatever, you know, whatever. You gotta hit your quota. And so I think sex tends to fall into that. And unless you do set aside time for conversation about it and the actual act of it. And we all know like that men don't spend enough time like with foreplay and like all of those things, but you can't really like fucking figure it out unless you take the time to really like be open to hearing and not be offended or whatever. So it's a lot of your work, like, is it convincing someone that they need to shut the fuck up and listen to their partner, or listen to their body more? I mean, how much listening is involved in your advice?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I find that a lot of times, like if we're talking about a male-female pairing, a lot of times the husband is willing to listen, and sometimes the wife doesn't necessarily know what to tell him. So I think it's like, sometimes you get a husband that's kind of like, okay, buddy, you really are like missing the mark here a little bit. And he maybe should be asking some more questions. But equally as often, at least, it's like women haven't taken the time to learn their own body. We all kind of just go through the motions of sex and don't really take time to think about, what are my turn-ons? Can I articulate that? What are the things that get me in the mood mentally, maybe before we even start touching each other? Because that's a big one too. Sometimes people will initiate, especially dudes, because I don't know if you've heard the whole like microwave oven versus like real oven. So it's like the men are like a microwave where you just press the button. They're like good to go. It's like, cool, sexual stimulus. I am turned on. And like women, it's like, you got to preheat the oven a little bit. And so figuring out, you know, what does that preheating look like? But it's like, if she's in the middle of working on her laptop and she's kind of stressed and she has a deadline coming up, just like coming up and kissing her passionately out of nowhere is maybe like not the way to do it. Right. And so it's figuring out like, how do I help her shift from whatever mode she's in into feeling relaxed, into feeling, you know, free, into like letting go of her cares and worries and being present and connecting sexually. And so that's something that needs to be articulated, but a lot of people don't know how to answer the question.
Wow. I mean, and I think, you know, there's a level of frustration, I think, when things, maybe in the beginning of issues coming up, people are willing to communicate, but then there's a level of frustration that kind of comes in between that. And it's like the passive aggressive shit. I've done it. I've had partners do it where they're like, they don't want, fuck it then, fine. You know, I'm gonna go drive my fucking truck around or go to the bar or go play video games or whatever it is, right? I'm gonna go binge Sex Education season 2 or whatever the fuck, right? Gilmore Girls, anything. Like everyone, they kind of, people separate and go do their shit because they're whatever. So that can kind of get in the way of communication too. And I think that's like a poison, I think, because that's all it does is like delay and then add to. So I would ask, you know, if you have a couple, right, a male, female, like we're talking about a couple who is just like having issues, like is it pretty clear from the beginning for you that you're just like, okay, y'all aren't talking, like someone's getting mad and leaving the situation. Like it's, if you take away the frustration, then maybe get back to the communicating. Like it's, is that like usually what you see right away and it's a simple fix, or is it complicated?
It's a mixed bag.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag because some people are communicating. It's just not going very well. Mm. And so in those cases, it could be, you know, people are taking things personally. That's probably one of the number ones. Some people are taking things personally. So it's like how your partner feels is actually not personal. You know, it's like there's the circumstance of what's happening. And then there's how we're thinking about the circumstance. It's how we're thinking, like, what is our lens? What is our perspective that creates how we're feeling? So that's what people need to realize is like, okay, this is not my fault. My partner's feeling emasculated, or this is not my fault. My partner's not turned on. It's trying to then understand what's going on inside my partner's mind that they're feeling this way. And then just be like gently curious and not take it so personally, because the taking it personally then leads to getting defensive and escalating. And then you're like off to the races with a big fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, like this, you're just like going down the well, and at the bottom of the well is the girl from The Ring most times. And that's not a good place for a relationship. But you know, it does feel like communication, sort of passive aggressive, you know, like bullshit. I mean, is there a point of no return? I mean, what else besides an unwillingness, right? Or a passive aggressive or an anger or taking it personal, like you said.
Yeah.
I just feel for most people, that's really difficult to swallow, like not taking it personal. I think people tend, you know what I mean? So is there a point where it's like, not that the relationship's ruined, but that the communication piece is like, this is going to take an excavation.
There's a lot of cases where an excavation is needed, but I do think people need to work on not taking things personally. I don't know if you've read that book, The Four Agreements, by Don Miguel Ruiz. It's like super popular, but one of the sections is all about take nothing personally. And I think I used to take everything personally. And then I think reading that was a bit of a turning point for me. Like, oh, this is possible. Like I can have a whole new lens on like how other people are feeling about me that feels much less personal. And I get less defensive, and it's a good place to be. So I highly recommend doing that work. But then you're mentioning like shit happens and like things change in a relationship. So there's forgiveness too. Like how forgiving can you be? And so we have to kind of stretch ourselves sometimes. But I do think it can get to a point where you just have this clarity of like no ill will against this person necessarily. This is just not what I want. You know? So even if you do the excavating and the detective work and you improve the skills, you might wind up realizing this is not what you want.
Yeah, I mean, and that's scary too, because I think most people who are in committed relationships are like, this is it for me. There's no whatever. And then when someone, it does become difficult for you or for they to communicate, or maybe someone wants to introduce a little something else in the relationship, they're like, you son of a bitch, right? Do you see that a lot too? Like when there's an abrupt change or someone has a shift and they want something different, that it's just like,
like that can happen with non-monogamy, you know, like when, so sometimes couples will come to me and they're interested in opening up the relationship. And so I really try to help them to anticipate like, okay, one, this is a risk, you know, going down this path, you know, may or may not lead to you staying together. But that said, it's like, how can we pace things? How can we like adjust our expectations? How can we learn to manage our own emotions really well? But that's an example where, one partner might wind up being like, I can't go back. Like, I'm getting a lot out of this. I'm learning about myself through these different connections. You know, I'm really loving this. I'm energized by it. And the other partner might be like, I just like don't even have the interest, or it's too much for me to manage, or I'm just not finding other people I'm connecting with, or I'm not liking that you're out and about all the time. So that's one where it could just be, okay, we've communicated. We just want different things.
Yeah. Okay. So you hit on something that is wildly popular on the show, as I'm sure you would imagine, and that's non-monogamy. So let's stick with that for a second.
Okay.
When people come to you and they're like, I want to open my relationship, what's the first thing that you say? Do you say why, or do you say,
whoa. Oh yeah. Yeah. I want to know that. I mean, I'm so like, it's funny because it's, you know, people pay to come talk to me about this stuff, but I'm so nosy, but that's good. You know, it helps make me good at my job. So I'm kind of like, what's the background and yeah, why? And is there something that came up recently? And I do find that there's some kind of trend where it's like people in their mid 30s who got married early and came from religiously conservative backgrounds. Like there's a whole segment of people kind of in that realm. So sometimes it's like, we haven't gotten to explore. We don't fully know ourselves. Maybe we're not connecting sexually as much as we want to. And we think that might be partially due to our, you know, lack of experience in trying things. So I help people figure out, like, is what you actually want to be with other people or is what you actually want to have a stronger connection with each other?
And which do you find it is more so than
I mean, usually by the time they come to me, they want to go forward with the non-monogamy. But I don't know that that's always the best choice for them.
Well, yeah. So
it's what they do.
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah.
It's like once the idea gets in there, you know, it's hard to stop.
Of course. But are you finding that they're doing it because they're just horny or are you doing it because they want a stronger connection? Because I feel like it almost feels like two different tracks, you know, because like sometimes...
Yeah, I would almost say neither.
Okay.
I think it's more about like a self-exploration thing in some ways. Yeah. So it could be, you know, we haven't been really sexual. Let's go explore something. It could be... And I know that they say like, okay, if you're not in a great place in your sex life, don't go open it, which I somewhat agree with. Or if one partner really wants to do it, but the other one doesn't, you know, maybe don't move forward. But I do feel like it becomes a bit of a runaway train.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you're the one partner that's like, I kind of need this, you know, like I love my partner for companionship and I hope this helps our sex life, but I need to kind of be with other people and figure out, you know, who am I as a sexual being? And a lot of times people want validation. That would be the other thing is like, people want to know that they're attractive. People want to know that they kind of have the skills to date and to attract someone and to have sex.
Well, first of all, runaway train might be the episode title for this motherfucker because that's great. And I do feel like it's a bit of a theme that we're on right now, a bit of a runaway train. Runaway trains are not always bad. They sound horrific. There was that song by Soul Asylum back in the 90s. Like,
yeah, it's in my head.
Whatever. Yeah. But it does sort of encapsulate this idea that like once that idea is there, right? There is no stopping it. It's like telling your kids, like, you can have the brownie, but, and then before you get to what the butt is, they've already swallowed it. So it's like, Okay. So runaway train, sticking with that sort of theme. I mean, how do you help somebody like, you know, okay, we're going to open our relationship. Mm-hmm. Then what? Like, what are the safeguards, right? Because you're right, because there are, I mean, you know, we talk about like setting up safe words and doing all the things, but like, again, and I've said this a trillion times, but like nobody wants somebody yelling sweet potato or whatever it is, like at the top of their lungs, like, well, somebody pounds this other woman out or whatever, because I do feel like in threesomes, when we're talking about coupled, you know, that it runaway train, it escalates quickly.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of a fluid, sex is always sort of a fluid, like, oh, we're doing this, now we're doing that, and whatever.
Right.
And so that can be really scary, I think, for a couple. So what do you advise?
I mean, so I'm a very thorough communicator, which might also be part of why I do this work. So a lot of times people will come in and they'll say, okay, so we've talked about it. We've kind of ironed things out. I'm like, what exactly have you talked about? Like, have you talked about, can you date separately? Have you talked about if you're open to a triad? Have you talked about, you know, are you going to have sex in front of each other? Are you going to talk about whether or not you want to hear things? Have you talked about, you know, are you going to save, how many nights a week do you want to spend together? Because what if your partner's like, cool, I have 5 dates set up this week. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, if you didn't explicitly discuss that, you know, you could be on 2 different pages. So I kind of help them almost like go through the checklist of like, here's all the checkpoints to make sure you've really thoroughly discussed this and you kind of have a plan in place. And I recommend people going slowly because especially if they're brand new to this, you know, before you go to a swinger club, or even the first time that you do, maybe you just watch your partner kiss someone else and you just go into the night knowing we're not doing any more than that. And then we're going to come home and process and see, did we lose our shit? Did we have this like terrible adrenaline surge, you know, and feel like the world was ending? Or was it like, okay, I had a moment and then I was actually okay. Great. Then maybe you kind of proceed to the next step. But it's like, if you're freaking out at step one, then that's kind of a sign you have some more communicating to do before you think about moving forward again.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's vastly underestimated how much communication and work it takes to have an open on any level. And
it really is.
There's so much to non-monogamy. There's, you know,
there's,
we're going to experiment all the way up to like full blown, like polyamory. You said triad. Mm-hmm. What's the definition of a triad?
It's like a three-person relationship, right?
So like a throuple,
Yeah, like a throuple or a triad, same thing where you're committed. And then the throuple or triad can be closed or open as well.
Is there a difference between a throuple and a triad?
No, same thing. Yeah. I think just certain relationships prefer one word over the other.
Yeah. Triad sounds dangerous, but, you know, whatever. Whatever, you know? Maybe it's like, you know, a little edgier. We're in a triad, you know, whatever. I mean, what would you say? And again, like, you don't have to like pull out your notes or anything, but what would you say the percentage of couples that come to you that want to open their relationship actually wind up sticking together in the long term?
I mean, I haven't had anyone break up kind of on my watch, but like what happens afterwards, I don't know.
You know,
so I would doubt that they all stay together.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, are having issues and trying to work through it.
Yeah.
So just depends kind of what happens. But sometimes one partner winds up being more monogamous, you know, and then you kind of have like a mono poly relationship.
Yeah. And see, that is something that I feel like is very, nobody wants to talk about that. You know what I mean? Like,
and it's fairly common.
Yeah. It's a thing for sure.
It's a thing.
I remember actually episode one, I was blown away because the guest I had on this show, you know, we were mid pandemic when I launched, and we talked about like sex surrogates, like, and people were like, what? You can do that? You
know? I have a client and we work with a sex surrogate, and I'm going to use the word triad again,
but sure.
A triadic therapeutic relationship. Mm-hmm. So I help with the psychological part. The surrogate helps with the physical and sexual part.
Okay. And so what, I mean, and I asked this in episode one, but I'll re-ask it because we're up into the 80s now, but like, you know, what are some reasons? Okay. What is a sex surrogate, right? Let's redefine it. And also too, like, what would be some reasons why someone would use a sex surrogate in a monogamous
relationship? So officially, I think they're called surrogate partners. I think they maybe used to be called sexual surrogate, but surrogate partner. And so it could be someone who maybe has never had sex. Maybe it's somebody who's a little bit past the typical point of like making your sexual debut. And, you know, they're kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I just want some coaching. And I want sort of a safe space where I don't have to like get it perfect or get it right the first time and just kind of build my skills and confidence. And then sometimes what winds up coming out through that is that, you know, maybe there was some kind of diagnosis that was missed. And maybe this person's been struggling socially in general. It could also be if someone's having like a sexual performance issue, or maybe they've gone through cancer and their body works differently on a sexual level. Maybe they have some other kind of, you know, physical disability or, you know, so it really could be any number of issues.
Yeah. I think the one that we keyed in episode one, and anybody out there who remembers, cause I don't, feel free to just shit talk me in the comments. But I think there was a high desire partner and a low desire partner. Mm. And the low desire partner is like, we just need to hire somebody for you. Cause I don't want to break up.
Oh.
I love you, but like, you know, go get it.
Interesting.
And she was like in the room, maybe sometime, whatever it was. So like there was that, and that's,
I don't know if I would go with the surrogate partner, because surrogate partners have like specialized training for it to be therapeutic. I would say just go with a sex worker for that.
Yeah. Well, Yeah. Okay. I mean, that.
Yeah. And it's just to have sex and there's no therapeutic goals.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about that too, as well. Like, you know, when the pandemic hit, a lot of that, like, cash, people were like, wait a minute, you're spending how much on a sex worker or an OnlyFans or whatever? And like, right. No, we discussed this. We're budgeting. And it was kind of like a wake up call.
That's real.
Yeah. And in that same vein, like, what have you noticed? And it doesn't have to be about the pandemic, but as a certified sex therapist, like, what are you seeing? And I don't want to say post pandemic because it's never fucking over ever, but are there new issues now in the world of sex and dating? Because, you know, there's certain things around apps, there's certain things around OnlyFans. Some of us are getting angrier about sex work. There is more of like an understanding about sex work. So I feel like we're in a really, I don't want to say difficult place, but like a different place than we were in 2019. So maybe like what issues around that are you noticing in your work?
I do think OnlyFans really changed everything because it was like, everyone was either on OnlyFans or had a friend who was on OnlyFans. My hairdresser was on OnlyFans, you know? And so I think it really normalized sex work in some ways that are good for people to kind of see this person. I know this person. Like, I know what makes them happy, what makes them sad. I know that they have this whole life and they do OnlyFans. Because I think so often we objectify sex workers and like treat them a certain way. But when we just realize like, oh, this is just like my neighbor, or my hairdresser, or my friend. And it's just like, okay, cool. Sex workers are normal people too. Yes. So I think it was really good in that way. And I think some of that has stuck. I don't know that I see like a huge downside. What do you think are some of the challenges? Like, what do you think is kind of different or weird now?
You know, the thing to me that I think is like most of these, we'll call them like sort of weak-minded, like incel dudes. They have this notion or this idea that, one, if you're an OnlyFans girl and I see you at a concert, I could stick my fingers in your pussy without asking, right? Well, I don't know. I mean, and
that would be objectification, yeah.
Right, and rape and assault and whatever, So, and when you go to concerts, like there's always issues with assholes, right? With idiots, with incels.
Yeah. I get this as a sex therapist too. That's kind of what I was saying at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how can we create more safety? It's like sex workers, sex therapists, sex podcasters, treat us like you would any other human.
Right. Like, so
bottom line, end of story.
I mean, even like crowd surfing. Like, I remember when I was like back in the 90s, like dudes would just grab like chicks, like vaginas and assholes and whatever.
Oh God. And
so it's always been there, but I would say now post 2020, we'll say post whatever, what we're calling it. The Great Reset. Yeah, that really happened. I would say that those kind of guys, if we can call them guys, are more empowered, right? They feel like they can, you know, disrespect and whatever. And I absolutely hate that. Number one.
Yes,
number two, I'm seeing the same kind of guys attack women more openly for choosing to be single and childless in their 20s and 30s. So that those are the two things that I see that I absolutely hate. I'm trying to actually, I'm in the midst of booking someone on the show who is just in the news for something like really crazy that happened to her because she just made a TikTok. And so we'll see if that happens, but it has to do with that. So I just, there's this weird, and you know, I don't know if it's the, you know, the red pill, Andrew Tate fucking morons, or Trump. If it's the Trump stuff, or if it's both or whatever, but I just think that at a certain point, that is a choice. It doesn't matter if your dad was like a crazy, you know, Republican racist loser. You choose for yourself what you want to do with your life in terms of respecting opposite sex, same sex relationships, those sorts of things. Yeah. It just feels like whatever. So that's what I would say, unfortunately.
Well, okay. So, and I don't think you're wrong. And that part is like super sad and disheartening.
Sure.
I also think it's like, as women have become more empowered, more financially secure on their own, more confident to be sexual, maybe it can be emasculating to some guys who are insecure, you know? And so what do they do? It's like, ah, women suck. Or I'm going to try and control women, or, you know, people who maybe felt like they haven't gotten attention from women, haven't gotten the validation, maybe are trying to like take women down a peg. I just saw something on Instagram yesterday, or was even earlier today, but it was some kind of influencer guy who had like the 12-year-old kids, like boys, screaming like something about like slurs against LGBTQ people and women. And it's weird because it's like when I was growing up, I don't know about you, but it was like, oh, each generation gets a little bit more progressive. Each generation gets a little less racist and a little less sexist and a little bit less, you know, homophobic and whatever. And then to kind of see this like surge of like young people being really unkind and prejudiced towards other humans. It's like, oh, that's scary and creepy and all of the things. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, did they just not get enough love growing up?
And that's the thing is like, at what point, right? Like, does it become something that is, it's always on you, but like, at what point do we, people are like, oh, they're growing up in these terrible situations and da-da-da. Like, no, you can't, we're not going to blame it on that. Like, then that's what I,
right.
And to be honest, like, the mixed messaging from Instagram just doesn't help. It's kind of like Instagram just doesn't operate without ass. Like Instagram needs ass shaking. Like it needs.
But it's like they censor every fucking post that I make, and I'm sure you too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, your show and my show both have the word sex in them.
Yeah, and I've had an account deleted. I've been walled off from all other whatever, and so. Then you'll see the women who are shaking ass and they'll get taken off, but then they'll be allowed back on. And then it's like,
right.
Since when did Instagram, they'll allow the comments of like the nasty, like, you know, women are pigs and whatever the fuck people are saying. Mm-hmm. And how could she do that? Anybody who makes money on OnlyFans is like, they'll allow the loser shit, but then they won't, you know what I'm saying? And so.
I think the thing that I feel like these dudes don't get is like the more you behave in this way, the less you make it safe for women to be sexual, but then you want to have sex with us still.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like they're really creating this like negative feedback loop that I'm like, I don't even think it's in their best interest.
No, it's never.
It makes no sense.
No, it's never in their best. That's the thing is they're not getting attention from women directly towards them. Like when they're sending the DM, it goes unanswered, it goes whatever.
Right, right.
For whatever reason, right? And they're like, they're pissed about it. So now they're in the comments and whatever.
Exactly.
And then it becomes this thing that's like, whatever. And so I just think that like, you can't like, you know, worship whomever, Andrew Tate and the, and all these, so all these gross. People. Yeah. And then expect that, you're just going to like have sex with everyone and whatever. But the thing is Instagram's telling you the opposite. It's like, no. We want more of your negativity and your hatred towards women because it makes the post
drives the algorithm.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would add to my list. Yeah.
So basically social media is a cesspool, which we know.
Yeah.
This is why everyone should just listen to our podcast, right. You know, Dustin? Right. Fuck Instagram. Just listen to our podcast.
I'm sure that they're going to love these clips that I put out, whatever. I would say that those are my three, you know, that somehow we're empowering the wrong kind of person to ask out and whatever. Yeah. And that's terrible because, you said earlier that OnlyFans has given more of like a credence that was needed to sex work. And I think, you know, sex work of any kind, it's the oldest form of currency, you know, in the world, right. As I've learned from this show. And like, it's like any other job. It's like any, whatever, what, since when, you know, how, so the thing I think that we're missing, and the thing that I think that Instagram and some of these incel dudes should be celebrating is like, oh shit, like I can see my hot neighbor if I'm respectful and pay her money every fucking month.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
Right? And like,
that's what they're missing.
It's
when you create a safe space for women to be sexual, we'll be sexual. Exactly. And then you'll get to benefit from that.
Exactly.
Right.
And who in their right mind, who's like a horny dude, like does not want that. You're actively working against that. Right.
And 100%. Like, please keep spreading the word on this, Dustin, because actually I do think part of the change is going to be men who are perceived as like masculine or successful or like have muscles or whatever dudes admire in other dudes. Like, I think it's going to be like those guys kind of spreading the word of like, this is how you do it. Like, here's what Andrew Tate and all these like dumbass people are doing. Mm-hmm. Here's like the more evolved way to do it. That's good for everyone, where you're going to get more of what you want. Women are going to feel safe and we're all going to get along better.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, it's like, I always get, whenever I say something in a comment thread that someone doesn't like, they're like, oh, you're just like a simpy fuck who like interviews like women about sex. I'm like, what about that is simpy? Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Like, it's working out kind of well for me right now.
Yeah, it's like, I think you should figure out that word. I don't think that word means what you think it means, bud.
No.
And whatever. And people can call me whatever they want. I could really give a shit less. It helps drive my algorithm because I'm using that same shit.
True.
So if you want to hate, do it in the comments, y'all. but the thing I think that everyone is missing too is that, like, you know, there's this pay discrepancy, and women have been like, oh, so if we use our bodies on OnlyFans, we'll make $1 million a month. Fuck you. I'm going to go do it. And they go and do it. Yep. That should be celebrated. That shouldn't be fucking ripped apart. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and it's a business, you know, like I've had friends be like, oh, I want to create content. I want to do whatever. And I'm kind of like, it's a business. Like, it might sound like fun because it's sex, but like, you're going to have to do marketing and you're going to have to like do editing and you're going to have to do, you know, businessy tasks and bookkeeping. Like, this is not just like take a sexy picture and post it online and you're going to make millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's a ton.
But there has to be respect.
A ton of work.
Yeah.
I mean, how many are you, do you have clients come to you or work with you or hit you up about like feeling shame about starting an OnlyFans or doing sex work?
Not really. No. So like the sex workers I have worked with as clients, it's not so much shame. So they're probably like past that.
Yeah.
I think though what it is, you kind of mentioned it, was like, well, all these men are out there like doing shitty things or saying this or that, or they're making more money. And so I do think sometimes then women will do OnlyFans or other sex work, you know, stripping, whatever, thinking like, okay, like they see men as sort of like money or a way to get money.
Yeah.
And then they also feel like, you know, their sexuality is more of a commodity. So sometimes they can lose touch with what they actually want as a sexual being because they're used to kind of being a professional people pleaser when it comes to sexuality. Cause it's like, okay, well, this is how I earn my living, by doing whatever this dude wants me to do or whatever the fans want me to do. And so I think that's where it's important. So it's like, if you're enjoying it as work, if you can kind of be like, oh, this is my like sexy alter ego, or this is an aspect of my personality I like to lean into. And here's what actually arouses me. Here's what makes me feel safe and secure and comfortable in a sexual situation. Here's what I want to do. I think that's where people can get lost, is like they lose, what do I want sexually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of creators will tell me once they sort of give up the people pleasing part of it and they dial into what they want, they actually wind up being more turned on, and they're actually like, actually coming on camera, and like, then their money just goes through the roof because everybody loves something.
It's
like
it's alignment.
Yeah. Everybody loves something more real. Right. You know,
I think so. I mean, they must not, because there's so much fake ass porn out there that I'm like, why is there not more real porn? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a whole, like viper's nest of reasons. I mean, there, I will say that from what I've noticed, like in the you know, the ultimate ranking systems on Pornhub, it's like amateur is always in the top five. You know what I
mean?
That's
true.
So there is a piece to it there. You know,
there's definitely a piece to it, but I still think the majority is pretty fake.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I also think that, like, you know, for me, like when I'm watching porn or when I'm like searching something out, I need it to be fake enough, but with a hint of realism. Like,
interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, I need it to be like some taboo shit that will probably never happen. But if there's just a hint, so like I need like a 90-10, 80-20 kind of a kind of a thing, you know? And like So I think there's definitely something to that. And speaking of like personal preference and like personal things, I mean, what got you started in this kind of work? I mean, was there an experience you had when you were younger? Was there just like a pull or like a drive to learn more about sex and sexuality?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something, because I get asked this question a lot, it's something that I continue to reflect on. Like, looking back, was there foreshadowing, you know, of me becoming a sex therapist? And it's so funny. I remember hinting to my dad. I'm like, Dad, I might wind up doing something kind of out there, like as a career. And I remember the example I gave him was like, what if I become a strong woman? Like, they had World's Strongest Man competitions. I'm like, what if I become a strong woman? Would you still love me? It didn't go down that path, but I did pick something a little unusual. So there was part of me knew I'm not going to just go down a super conventional path. But I mean, to be honest with you, my undergrad's in finance. I was a high school counselor for 6 years. I was a realtor on the side. So I've done so many different things. But there was the curiosity, you know, and in college I was part of CARES, and it was like campus association for like rape elimination or something like that. So I think there was that interest in like, how can I help make people feel safer? There was kind of exploring my own confidence when it came to like flirting and dating and all of that. There was a long-term relationship in which like the sex was really pretty stale and my pleasure was really an afterthought. And I was there to show up for the communication around sex and he really wasn't. There's some clients that just got like, before I was officially a sex therapist, that were just really brave and like coming in and talking about their sexuality. And it really allowed me to see sex is not superficial, you know? So many people think sex shouldn't be the most important thing in a relationship. Sex shouldn't be this, sex shouldn't be that. And it's like, it's part of our identity. It's part of our self-expression. It's the reason we exist. It's not superficial. So I think we have to kind of get over that. And so some of my work with clients helped me get over that, helped me see that when we're not sort of in alignment with ourselves sexually, we might develop substance abuse problems because we think we're weird. We're not accepting ourselves. We're not able to live out the sex life and the relationship life that we really want. So like, that's big. That can really create like a rift inside of someone if they don't address that and have a safe space to address that. And I just realized like, I just like don't really have many judgmental bones in my body when it comes to what people do in their sex life. And I'm really well suited to be a sex therapist because of that. So that's at least the gist of my story.
No, I think it's, I think that's incredible because it's like, you're talking to your dad about being a strong woman and like, you know.
I'm like, what if I do this weird thing, Dad? What if I do this other weird thing? And so when I finally told him, hey Dad, I think I'm going to be a sex therapist. I applied to University of Michigan's program. He's like, that's great, Heather. That was like the first words out of his mouth. I think you're going to be great at that. And you're going to help so many people and it's really needed. And I was like, oh my God, what like a beautiful response for my father.
Yeah, because he's thank God she's not doing the strong woman thing. what a brilliant way to fucking, everybody should take notes. Like, that's how you tell your parents. Like, Mom, I think I'm going to write my own religion. Like, no, that's, and then you, it's actually just a novel. It's just a novel. I just need
a hilarious. Small loan. We should make a script for people to tell people that they're like, going on OnlyFans or becoming a sex therapist. But yeah, so my mom is the one who had a harder time. So my mom was also more repressed. And so I also think I grew up kind of more like afraid of sex and repressed and fearful of getting pregnant and, you know, probably kind of into the whole slut shaming thing when I was in high school. I'm like, I don't want to be like have a bad reputation and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of that did get ingrained in me. And it's like, you know, even just going through college, I had a close friend who started talking about masturbating and I'm like, oh my God, you can talk about this openly? So I had these like pivotal moments where I was like, oh, that opened me up a little bit. And then I went to the Pleasure Chest sex toy stores in Chicago and they were so fucking comfortable talking about sex and I wasn't yet, you know? And so I was like, oh my God, it's possible to be this comfortable? Like it just kind of opened up the possibilities and it like helped me see that you can have a level of freedom where you're not censoring yourself and you're really exploring like who are you authentically when it comes to sex. And it's amazing.
No, it really is because it,
yeah,
you're right. It is such a part of your identity. It's, and again, yeah, like to repeat myself from other episodes, but like, it's not just how you show up in the world. It's like how you walk through the world. It's like,
yeah,
how you communicate, consciously, subconsciously, what your body's saying. It's all of those things. You know, double question in closing with you on this episode. How has being a sex therapist actually changed your sex life? Like, have you explored things like non-monogamy? Have you looked at like, I might be interested in BDSM or like whatever it may be, or anime, right, fucking whatever, right, like, but stuff that you would never have got to, right? Number one. And then I'll ask you.
Yeah. It's interesting. Part of me is like, I think I've had less sex since becoming a sex therapist. But I had explored a lot of that stuff before officially becoming a sex therapist, or like concurrently, maybe like around the time I applied to go into the University of Michigan program for it. And a lot of that was also after my breakup. So when I had that 2-year relationship end that was kind of mediocre and my needs weren't really being prioritized, I did a lot of exploring for the next 5 or 6 years, I would say, after that. And that's, I think, what led to me deciding to become a sex therapist. It's like, okay, I've kind of been on my own journey now. And, you know, I see the benefits and the importance and the cool people that you meet, you know, along the way and the experiences that you have. So it's been good.
No, I think that's crucial to this entire episode. And that's why I kind of saved that question. Cause I feel like that's like the first question you probably get all the time. I'm like, no, you know what? We're flipping that. We're fucking putting these on the end, right? we do nothing normal around here. Okay. Final question. And you can take as much time as you want, but you know, they're gonna shoot you into space, right? And they want your last advice for humanity on the topic of sex and sexuality. There is a lot of confused, isolated, scared people out there. They don't know what they like. They don't know how to figure it out. They think maybe they're asexual. I want to start an OnlyFans. Maybe I like gangbangs, whatever. Yeah. All of it. Right.
Yeah.
So what are your final words to help them find some solace and to get them on the right path?
It's a good question. I would say
it's a bit dramatic, but
be yourself. Like, I know that's like basic, but it's like be your sexual self. And find community to support you in doing that. So whether that's, you know, hiring a coach or therapist like me, or going on FetLife and finding people that you vibe with there, or finding a Facebook group for ENM, awesome. But like find some people to support you because you're not alone. I think the real fear in exploring who we are authentically when it comes to sex is being rejected. And like losing the connections that we have, like even telling my parents that, you know, I'm becoming a sex therapist. It's like, there's, you know, it's like, oh, how are people going to react? Or is this going to create a rift? Or, you know, exploring ENM. It's like, oh, okay. If people know this about me, will they not want to be my friend? Will they judge me? Will they not see me the same way? And so I think if we proactively find some communities that also identify that way, we at least have that group of people that we know are kind of not going to reject us. And that can give us the confidence to move forward and explore more.
Love it. Love it. Heather Shannon, thank you so much for being with me on Sex Party this week. Let's tell these wonderful party going people where they can find you, where they can work with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So come find me at heathershannon.co. I do a free 45-minute Ignite Your Intimacy breakthrough session. If you qualify, so you can apply for that. I also have some fun freebies on there. I have a little dirty talk infographic if you're wanting to spice things up in the bedroom. So check that out. And then obviously my podcast, Ask a Sex Therapist.
Which we didn't even talk about, but that will lead us into the next time. I'm going to make sure you come back.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I would love to have you back to talk about the podcast because there was so much here. We didn't even get to that. So, but yeah, thank you.
We could go for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. But thank you so much for being with me on the show. And it's really, and I appreciate it. I can't wait to have you back.
Thanks, Dustin. I appreciate it. This was fun.
See you soon. Big thank you to my guest, Heather Shannon, for being with me on the show this week. Go check out everything she is doing, all of her amazing work, her amazing content on Instagram. If you want to see Heather again, maybe she'll pop up in the Christmas episode. Who knows? I don't know, but she will be back. We have a lot to talk about. So if you love guests like her, if you love your host, you want to support the show, right? How do you do that? Thanks for asking. If you're listening on platforms like Apple, Spotify, Google, iHeart, wherever, you can subscribe to the show. That's the most important part. If you want to leave a rating, if you want to leave a review, go ahead. You can do that. You don't have to. If you're watching on YouTube, bing, 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 bong, 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 bong. If you're watching on YouTube, I love you. I see you. I appreciate you. If you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to the channel. A lot of you are doing that lately. I love that. I'm appreciative of that. Thank you. You can also leave a comment. You can like the video. You can like all the videos. As always, I am available in the DMs on Instagram, and I will see you right back here from the new studio next week.
Thanks for listening. The party continues next week. Click subscribe and let's make this a regular thing. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SexPartyFM. Follow Dustin @DustinRibka.